The Congress is getting ready to go, and issues, it's amazing, issues that were complex, issues that were complicated, issues that could never get through Congress are just flying through so fast that, frankly, barely anyone's reporting it. Remember the S-CHIP program, the program to provide children's health care? Flew through the House, 289 to 139, Zoom. The Lilly Ledbetter issue, the idea that it began on the your gender, and you don't know about it, you can't sue, passed by the House, Zoom. We'll talk about the specifics of that. Stem cell research is in the works. A vote for the District of Columbia, something near and dear to my heart, is in the works. We'll talk about that. And in the Senate, of course, you've got the confirmation hearings. You have some controversies over Attorney General Eric Holder, over his pardons of Mark Rich. Well, he didn't pardon them. Clinton did, but, you know, Eric Holder didn't stand in his way. Then there's Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, who just couldn't seem to pay his own taxes. We'll talk about him. Over at the EPA, we have an amazing thing. We have a nominee, Lisa Jackson, who actually believes that science, get this, science should be the basis for deciding issues of environmental protection. Wow. That's a sea change for the Bush administration. And, of course, we have news from the outgoing Bush administration. One, they happen to have found all those missing emails, or so they claim. You remember those emails that just happened to talk about Karl Rove getting involved in the firing of prosecutors for political reasons, or the ones where Dick Cheney just happened to commit treason by outing a CIA agent that were missing for so long? Well, what do you know? A judge ordered them to find them, and they showed up. Or as the Amy Wiseman said, she, of course, of the crew, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, said, I'll believe it when I see it. Lots to talk about. Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden are resigning today. Joe Biden gave a very nice speech in the Senate. Hillary Clinton just today, in fact, passed her committee vote for the confirmation for the Secretary of State. I think she will fly through with shining colors. But those, none of that I talked about are the two big issues on Capitol Hill. No, the two big issues have to do with the economy and money. And they are the stimulus package and the Troubled Asset Recovery Program, or TARP, the second half of that $700 billion bailout to financial services companies. $350 billion went out, and there's a question over whether the second $350 billion will go out. That vote should happen really any moment. It'll almost certainly happen today. I want to give you all the details on that. So there is a lot going on in Washington and a lot to talk about. And why don't we start with the TARP? Because I think that's the most controversial one and likely to be, I predict, I may be wrong, but I predict the first loss for the Obama administration. Now, here's how it works. Back in October, you will recall, the Bush administration needed or demanded or wanted $700 billion for banks, financial institutions to reignite credit in the United States to help us get out of the Great Depression that we are facing. And there was a huge controversy, and you may recall it took some time to pass it. This is the thing, of course, that John McCain suspended his campaign and said he wouldn't show up at the first debate to run to Washington to save the country. And then the Republicans bailed out on the bailout. But they finally did pass it with a majority of Democrats and Republicans. And the reason they passed it is because, well, despite the fact that they're giving money to some of the same people who caused this crisis, as Barack Obama said, just because someone's smoking in their house and it catches on fire doesn't mean you don't put the fire out. First you put the fire out, and then you deal with the smokers inside. Well, there were supposed to be all kinds of protections in the TARP, in the bill. One protection was that it was going to go in two halves. $350 billion would be given right away. The other $350 billion would be given unless Congress votes not to give it. Kind of a reverse procedure. Meaning that, in essence, all it will take in order to get that $350 billion is one-third of either the House or the Senate. In other words, Obama will almost certainly get it. But we'll talk about how that works in just a second. Let me finish the other things that were supposed to happen with the first $350 billion. Number one, and most importantly, I think, for the Democrats and for all of us who are incensed at the gambling done on Wall Street, at the fact that, the people on Wall Street were simply playing around, gambling. I don't know what else you call credit derivative swaps, a fancy term because, they didn't want to call it insurance, because if you call it insurance, it's regulated, and then you have to have the money to back it up. No, they just called it swaps, like a swap meet or a gun show. And the idea is that we'll give you subprime mortgages all bundled together, all of which have, lots of reason to think that they're going to not be paid back. We'll rate them as AAA, say Moody's and Standard Poor's and the rating agencies. I did not consider it because AAA is our best rating. And if we rate these subprime mortgages with a subprime rating, people will stop buying them and know how are we going to get our fees that way. And so the most important concern for the Democrats, I know, on the Hill, was at the very, very least that the people who are getting this money, the CEOs of the major banks and financial institutions that messed up so badly, would not get bonuses, would not get salary increases, would not get golden parachutes. And an institution was set up, an inspector general, to watch where every dime went. That's in the legislation. And, of course, the Treasury Secretary, Hank Paulson, promised that every dollar would be watched and corporate salaries would be kept in check. Didn't work quite out that way. One of the reasons is because of a last-minute sentence added by some clever lawyer in the Bush administration, just as the thing was about to go on, which said that all these restrictions on corporate salaries and the like only come into effect when you buy up those troubled assets. You see, the plan was sold as buying up these troubled securities, these financial securities representing all this property across America that was underwater, that they felt had some value but no value today, that couldn't be sold. And then, of course, it was expanded, largely because of the complaints of both Democrats and Republicans, expanded to include other things like lending money to banks, really to do pretty much anything they wanted to do. And so the Treasury took the money, didn't use it to buy up the troubled financial securities, and lo and behold, now they don't have to do anything to protect corporate salaries. Nice. They also did a lousy job of watching where the money went. That made Democrats upset. Republicans were upset because they used a tiny portion of the $350 billion, really $14 billion, or, let's see, about 4% of the entire fund, to help the auto industry. Republicans were upset because they wanted to help the auto industry. They wanted to give the money to the auto industry. They just wanted to destroy Americans' unions in the process. Was that too much to ask? They wanted to make sure the United Auto Workers suffer. They wanted to make sure that particularly the people who are no longer working in the auto companies, the retirees, the ones who'd been there for 30 or 40 years and are now in their 70s and 80s and 90s and in need of things like health care and pensions, the things that they agreed to that were signed on the dotted line when they worked there for 30 years, wanted to make sure those go away. Bob Corker, Senator of Tennessee, wanted to make sure that people who retired from auto work lose their health care and pensions in their 80s and their 90s. This from the same senator who wants to get rid of Social Security as well. Well, Democrats, to their credit, showed they do have a little bit of backbone, refused the deal. And lo and behold, George Bush was forced to give it out of the TARP fund after all. So what's the point of all this? The point of all this is there's going to be a vote today. And it's a vote on whether to disapprove the $350 billion bailout. To disapprove it. Now, the way it works, and it is a weird thing, I'll grant you that, but the way it works is that the $350 billion goes unless Congress disapproves it. It's a reverse law. What that means is that if Congress votes today to disapprove the $350 billion, then all Barack Obama has to do is veto it, and I imagine it could be, you know, inauguration in the morning and veto in the afternoon. But if he vetoes the resolution of disapproval, then Congress would need a two-thirds vote to override it and to stop the money. They wouldn't get that two-thirds, and so the money would go, because they would need two-thirds in the House and the Senate, and surely Barack Obama can get one-third in a majority-controlled Democratic Congress. Surely he can get one-third of one House to support him. And he says he needs the money. So the money's coming. But Republicans don't want to give an early victory to Barack Obama. Now, Nancy Pelosi can stop this, interestingly enough. She could take a little political heat for it, but as the Speaker of the House, she controls what bills come up. And all she has to do is, even if the Senate passes today a resolution of disapproval, which I think, if I had to guess, will pass, she just doesn't bring it up in the House. And the money will go through. But the heart of the matter, you have Republicans who voted for the bailout, did not like the way the Bush administration handled the money, and based on the way the Bush administration messed up the money, are saying, we're not going to give the money to Barack Obama. Get it? Bush messed it up, therefore we don't give Obama the same leeway we gave Bush. My view is this. I can't see how Obama would mess it up any more than George Bush. He also wants to expand it to go not just to financial services companies, but to homeowners, small businesses, others who need credit. Heck, we elected the guy. Shouldn't we at least give him, at the very beginning of his time, a chance to show he can do a better job than George Bush? But the Republicans, the same ones who voted for this bill, are about to make a U-turn, I predict. And they're going to make a U-turn because they want to embarrass Obama, not because it'll change the money going. The money's going to go, as I said. The whole goal is to stop this wonderful bipartisan feeling where Barack Obama has an 82% approval rating and make sure he has an early failure and possibly an early veto. So it'll be interesting. I mean, she can stop it all. She can take the if she, let's see, may well pass the House this resolution disapproval, in which case Barack Obama would have to veto it. That would be even more heat-taking. My guess is Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi can have a little talk after the Senate approves the resolution of disapproval, and the House resolution won't come up. My prediction, we'll see if they carry it out. Other news, the other big legislation, of course, in the Congress, is the stimulus package. Now, this this stimulus package, this $850 billion proposed by Barack Obama, is even bigger than was suggested during the campaign. But I think it's necessary, and I think this is going to be probably the first really big a Democrat-Republican fight. Unlike the TARP program, which has pretty much half and half on each side, this is a program that, the Democrats want and the Republicans pretty much don't want. See, Democrats want to give at least as much money to health care and labor and education and infrastructure as was given to the financial services companies. And I actually think it's a good plan. It's, a lot of it's given to the states, about half or so. It's given to, of the $550 billion is given to the states. And that's for things like Medicaid and infrastructure and unemployment and food stamps and education and health and all kinds of good Democratic programs. And then the other $300 billion is for the federal government. Excuse me, the other half of the $550 billion, it's a little complicated here, is for the federal government to dole out. And that would be things like energy. Expect to see Barack Obama tomorrow at an Ohio wind turbine plant promoting green energy. The other $300 billion or so, tax cuts. The tax cuts promised by Barack Obama. Now, what's interesting here is what do the Republicans sign on? If they don't sign on, they're not going to get the business tax cuts that Obama promised. And you know what? I think the Democrats are right that those are a bad idea. Why? Well, Obama promised $300 per business for every job the business creates or saves. Saves? So you got a business and they got 103 employees and they keep 103 employees and they get a tax cut? Yeah, doesn't sound like that bad idea. I'm for the Democrats on this, particularly if Republicans don't join in. So that's just part of what's going on in Washington. As I said, there's SCHIP, EPA, lots of nominations, all kinds of other things going on, which I will detail with you when we come back. The toll-free number is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Bush keeps outdoing himself on his way out the door. This week, he gave the Presidential Medal of Freedom to Alvaro Uribe, the head of Colombia. Uribe has had close ties with right-wing paramilitary squads, and his government is a notorious human rights abuser. According to Human Rights Watch, in recent years, there's been a substantial rise in the number of extrajudicial killings of civilians attributed to the Colombian army. Army members apparently take civilians from their homes or workplaces, kill them, and then dress them up to claim they're combatants killed in action. Colombia also has the dubious distinction of leading the world in the murders of trade unionists. More than 2,600 labor leaders have been slain down there in the last couple of decades, and more than 400 while Uribe's been president. When he gave Uribe the award, Bush said, "President Uribe has reawakened the hopes of his countrymen and shown a model of leadership to a watching world. The future," Bush said, "will always be bright in a country that produces such men as President Alvaro Uribe." That's one last Orwellian award, courtesy of our shameless president. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Is the third time a charm? House Democrats think so, pushing through the twice-vetoed S-CHIP bill, counting on President Barack Obama to sign it. Jesse Russell reports.
After a heated debate on the floor of Congress, House Democrats won passage for the third time of a bill that will expand government-sponsored health care to 4 million children of poor families. The bill passed 289 to 139 and is an expansion of the state children's health insurance program. Outgoing President George W. Bush has twice vetoed a similar bill. Democrats made it clear that this bill, one of the first orders of business for the newly emboldened Democratic Congress, is an opening salvo in their fight for some form of universal health care. California Representative Henry Waxman.
This bill is a down payment on health care for all Americans, but at least we will start covering millions of low-income children.
Washington Representative Jim McDermott said health care is a right and not a privilege.
This legislation affirms the commitment of the new Congress to serve all the people, not merely those of means who can pay any price for health care, while the nation pays a steep price for not covering its children.
Creation of a single-payer universal health care system in the U.S. would create 2.6 million jobs. That's according to a study from the California Nurses Association. The union says establishing national single-payer health care would be a major economic stimulus, infusing $317 billion in new business and public revenues and $100 billion in wages into the U.S. economy. The study says the current total spent on health care in the U.S. is $2.1 trillion. Expanding Medicare to deliver health care for all in the U.S. would add $62 billion to that figure, much less than the cost of the Wall Street bailout. The study was done by the Institute for Health and Socioeconomic Policy, a research arm of the California Nurses Association. American Rights at Work is launching a $3 million TV ad campaign today supporting the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform.
The Employee Free Choice Act lets workers choose to join a union to earn better pay, health benefits, and job security. The Employee Free Choice Act. It's time the economy worked for everyone again.
A Hart Research Associates poll found 73% of adults support the Employee Free Choice Act. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Americans aren't buying. For the sixth straight month, sales at U.S. retailers have fallen. It is the longest decline since the Commerce Department began tracking the data in 1992. Inventory at U.S. retailers are also down, dropping by 0.7% in November. The price of goods imported to the United States have declined for their fifth straight month.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. There is a lot going on in Washington. All the things that seemed complex, that seemed hard to do, that they just didn't think could be done, are suddenly easy now. Maybe the best example of that is the S-CHIP program, State Children's Health Insurance Program. You remember this one. This happened right before the election. And they had a majority in both the House and the Senate. They had enough to get past a filibuster, even with, you know, bare Democratic control. Remember, we had 51, and that included both Joe Lieberman and Tim Johnson, he of the recovering stroke in South Dakota. But there was enough. There were 60 votes, but there weren't quite 67. And George Bush vetoed the bill. Seems that children's health care just wasn't that important to him. No, no, no. He was going to spend money on Halliburton rather than children right here in America. Well, this one just flew through. Easy passage. It will have an easy passage in the Senate where the Democrats control 59 seats. Well, 58. We have to wait for Al Franken in a couple months. But it does include Roland Burris. Roland Burris, no one seems to be standing in his way now. I think the Democrats made the point that they didn't like Blagojevich appointing the guy. They made their point, and then they quietly accepted a fairly certain Democratic vote. That's no particularly great compliment. The Democratic vote, and you take it where you can get it. But now that they're at 58, two are going to leave, Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton. Joe Biden gets a new job on Tuesday. January 20th, of course, he will be our next vice president. And he gave, I don't know if you saw any of it, a really nice speech in the Senate today, talking about his time there. He is a very long-serving senator. I think the third longest. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong. I know Ted Stevens is gone. I know Robert Byrd and Ted Kennedy have been there longer. But I can't think of too many who are longer than Joe Biden, other than those two. Said goodbye and told a funny story about when he was a 21-year-old, and he came to visit Washington. And in those days, it's hard to believe there were no police watching the Capitol. I mean, there was police, but you could basically wander in, go wherever you wanted. And you could even go in on the Senate floor. He came on a Saturday. I have to think the cop was off for the day. I can't think that even in the 60s. They allowed you just to walk in on the Senate floor, but apparently they did. Mistake, or maybe there was just no one there, and Joe Biden walked in and came up, and while the Senate was in session, sat in the empty presiding officer's chair, at which point a Capitol Police officer very quickly picked him up, as Joe Biden says, by the scruff of his neck and said, "Boy, what are you doing here?" And he left. What's interesting, of course, is that starting Tuesday, he will have the right to sit in that presiding officer's chair anytime he wants as the vice president. He is, of course, under the Constitution, the president of the Senate. He will be replaced by Ted Kaufman, a stand-in, his own chief of staff. Everyone understands that Ted Kaufman sits there for 2 years, votes Democratic, and then paves the way for Bo Biden, Joe Biden's son, currently serving in Iraq. Hillary Clinton is also leaving the Senate, gave a very good speech today, talking a lot about September 11th and her role as a newfound New Yorker, going in, of course, and visiting with Chuck Schumer and the horror of that visit on September 12th, the buildings, the embers still burning, people still trying to find living people in the ruins, the firefighters and other first responders working so hard. She gave a very nice speech. And it'll be up to, of course, David Paterson, the governor of New York, to decide who to replace her with. The only name that seems to have gotten a lot of press attention is Caroline Kennedy. In my view, she'd be the wrong person to pick. No particular disrespect to Caroline Kennedy. I just think she should pay her dues. Yes, she's the daughter of the former president, but that ain't enough. I'd like to see her, I don't know, hold a political office, perhaps, first. That would be nice. And, of course, there are a lot of very, very good members of Congress from New York who I think should take the place first. But that's not my decision to make. That's David Paterson's decision. As we learned from Rod Blagojevich, it's solely his decision. Paterson, of course, unlike Blagojevich, they're going to seat whoever he picks. Heck, if they're going to seat Blagojevich's pick, they'll seat Paterson's pick. I urge him, though, not to choose Caroline Kennedy. Meanwhile, it's going to be weird, right? There's 59 Democrats in the Senate. There's a number of very important votes. There's the vote on this TARP, the financial bailout. There's the vote on the stimulus package. They're going to need to get close to 60. And they'll only have 59 when this musical chairs is done. Now there's 58 because Franken's not there. Burris is there. Franken is not. Biden and Clinton will be gone, and they'll be down to 56. So I do hope that I assume that Ted Kaufman will be appointed very quickly. He'll fill Biden's seat quickly. I hope that David makes his mind quickly. Hillary Clinton is expected to easily win confirmation as Secretary of State. She came out of the confirmation committee in the Senate today by a 16-1 vote. The one vote against her was David Vitter of Louisiana. You remember Senator David Vitter. He's the one that got caught with the D.C. madam having his own prostitution scandal. And unlike Elliot Spitzer, the governor of New York, who despite his own call girl scandal, was a terrific regulator and frankly someone who I think would be excellent at the SEC despite his peccadilloes, shall we say, Vitter hasn't resigned. They're not even demanding he resign. And it's an interesting thing. I didn't know that they had higher moral values in New York than Louisiana. But the Republicans in New York demanded Spitzer resign, even though, let's face it, Spitzer, he did break the law. He was with the call girl, but he didn't use any state money. He used his own personal money. In fact, the very discovery of this I find really troubling, because it's still not clear who spied on Elliot Spitzer and why. They didn't have a warrant. They had no reason to believe he was conducting criminal activity. They spied on his private life, and yes, he paid for a prostitute. That's not a good thing. It's breaking the law. But in the scheme of things, I don't know. It's not that big a deal, at least to me. I'm much more concerned about financial corruption and bribery and the things Blagojevich did and the things all the Republicans in Congress did, everyone from Duke Cunningham to John Doolittle, Bob Ney to Tom DeLay. But the interesting thing to me, I guess, is the double standard. Spitzer had to go, or the Republicans would impeach him. Vitter is there and fine and still causing trouble. It'd be interesting to find out why he voted against Hillary Clinton. Is he going to argue it for ethical reasons? I don't know. Louisiana is a funny state. There, the Democrats in Louisiana reelected William Jefferson, the congressman found with $90,000 in his freezer, until he was indicted and finally lost in an election. I don't know why they can't get rid of David Vitter. But Hillary Clinton did get past her vote, 16-1, and there's no question she'll be approved in the Senate, so she had to step down. And I guess as of today, the Democrats have only 56 seats in the Senate. I wonder whether Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden will cast their last votes on the TARP program before they officially resign. That'll be interesting to see. Meanwhile, there are other nominees other than Hillary Clinton, and the two that are most talked about today are Eric Holder, the proposed attorney general, whose hearings were held today, and Tim Geithner, the proposal for Treasury Secretary. Now, Eric Holder is in the middle. In fact, he's testifying right now before the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he was asked some very tough questions by Arlen Specter about the Mark Rich pardon. And I have to say, I think those are fair questions. I think it's fair to ask him these questions. This was, after all, a guy on the lam, someone who had who was a fugitive from the law, and wasn't just involved in defrauding on his taxes, but apparently was involved in a very complicated arms payment that I still don't really understand, and I admit I don't. It's related, I think, to the arms for hostages to Iran. In any case, what happened with Mark Rich, whose wife was giving hundreds of thousands of dollars to Democrats to get elected, was that Clinton said, let's do it. And Eric Holder didn't stand in his way. Now, to be fair, the Constitution gives the president absolute plenary authority on pardons. Eric Holder couldn't have stopped it if he'd wanted to. But he did what the president said, and the Republicans want to see that he will be independent of the president. Now, in principle, that's something I support. I have long argued that the Attorney General of the United States is the nation's highest law enforcement officer and should be willing to tell the president no. And I will remain consistent in my views while the Republicans completely flip-flop on theirs. Do you happen to remember the name of the last Attorney General, not the current one, Mukasey, but the guy before him? I'll give you a hint. He would do anything that the president said, right? He would basically come when the president called. He would break the law and the Constitution when the president said so. Of course, I'm talking about Alberto Gonzalez. Alberto Gonzalez will forever be remembered, I think, for his attempt to trick the then Attorney General, John Ashcroft, into signing a law that was so severe, that had so much surveillance over American citizens without a warrant, was such a clear and flagrant breach of the United States Constitution, specifically the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable searches and seizures. It was so unreasonable that the guy in charge, the Deputy Attorney General Comey, who was in charge because John Ashcroft was undergoing gallbladder surgery, said that he would resign. The deputy FBI said he would resign. A whole host of people were ready to resign. And yet, Alberto Gonzalez did the president's bidding. he went and he tried to trick an extremely sick Attorney General John Ashcroft, one who, let's face it, you know, this is the guy who loved the Patriot Act. This is the guy who supported a lot of the warrantless wiretapping and putting people in prison without trial. It's not like John Ashcroft was this wonderful civil libertarian. But this went so far that even John Ashcroft said no. And apparently he could even say no when drugged up following his gallbladder surgery, sitting up in bed, angrily telling him no, telling him Comey, telling Alberto Gonzalez that Comey was in charge. He should ask him. And now Republicans are arguing that Eric Holder needs to be independent president. Talk about a quick about face. The same ones that didn't even want to explore what Alberto Gonzalez had to do. I guess that's par for the course. I guess that's to be expected. Anyway, I do think Eric Holder will come through in shining colors. There is another pardon, one about some Puerto Rican nationalists who formed a apparently a terrorist group many years back that Bill Clinton wanted to pardon them as well, and apparently Eric Holder didn't say no. I think he's going to get past all that. Look, attorney generals have always been a strange creature. Loyal to the president, to be sure, but at the same time supposed to be the highest law enforcement officer of the United States. And yet, who can forget that John F. Kennedy chose Robert Kennedy, his brother, as his attorney general? I don't think that could happen today. But I don't know that Robert Kennedy showed a lot of independence from John Kennedy. Ironically, Bill Clinton, going to his third choice, Janet Reno, because you may remember that his first two choices had problems with hiring illegal immigrants as housekeepers and nannies. But his third choice, Janet Reno, who he had all 8 years of his presidency, which has got to be, I think, the longest serving attorney general in American history, was one of the most independent of all. She did tell Bill Clinton no. And in doing so, I guess she didn't tell him no enough because she was constantly attacked by the Republicans. But you got to give her credit. She was an independent attorney general. In any case, Eric Holder has a very impressive resume. Apart from the pardons, I think he's solid. He's certainly a very intelligent man and someone that has a long experience as a prosecutor and someone who I think can very carefully balance the need to spy on terrorists, real terrorists, absolutely, get a warrant, do it the right way, via court proceedings, and at the same time protect our civil liberties. The other nominee that is in the news today, or and has been really for the past few days, is Timothy Geithner. Now, Timothy Geithner is the former head of the Federal Reserve Board in New York. And he's seen by many as a compromise choice, as it were. He's someone who worked with Hank Paulson, worked with Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve, someone who worked with the Bush administration on the TARP program. Now, you would think that the same Republicans who are angry about how the Bush administration handled the TARP program would be outraged at Timothy Geithner. You'd be wrong. They like the guy precisely because he has shown that he can work with Republicans. And he can. And he can. And, I you know, he seems like a good choice, a very smart man, a young man who appears to know what he's doing, or at least as much as anyone does in that field. So I'm not knocking the guy. I just think it's interesting how much the Republicans support him. They support him so much that when it was discovered that he didn't pay his taxes, the Republicans said, shh, don't worry about it. We're fine with him. Move along here. Fascinating. Now, to give Tim Geithner a little credit, it was just taxes. It was a little complex. See, he worked for the International Monetary Fund. The International Monetary Fund hires nationals from all different countries, and so they kind of have to compute their own taxes. They don't withdraw taxes because apparently it's too confusing to withdraw under different systems for the United States and Canada and France and England and all the different countries in the IMF. And apparently it was confusing exactly how to handle self-employment tax. Granted. But this guy wants to be Treasury Secretary. This guy wants to run the nation's treasury. He wants to run the IRS. if he can't figure out how much to pay in appropriate taxes, well, then he's not smart enough to be Treasury Secretary. Most likely it wasn't because he couldn't figure it out. Most likely he was busy or did it quickly or who knows. Who knows? I guess we'll find out at his confirmation hearing. But what's fascinating to me about this is how little people are making of it. I mean, if the Republicans were to insist that this disqualified the guy, I don't know that I could disagree. I mean, they make a strong point. The guy running the IRS should pay his taxes. But they're not. They like him. And the Republicans are showing that if they like the guy, they'll say nothing. Now you understand why Spitzer's gone? You see, they're fine with a Democrat, Republican, a moderate, who wants to run the IRS, who didn't pay some of his taxes. They're okay with that. By the way, he did pay him back, just so you know. Apparently, he was audited in 06. The IRS discovered it. He paid it back for 04 and 03. And then just after he was nominated, he paid back for 01 and 02. He'd been told that he didn't owe the money, which is true because, you know, when your taxes are more than 3 years old, even if you didn't pay, you're sort of off the hook. It's a statute of limitations thing. But he paid that back, some $26,000. My point is larger than this. My point is that if you don't pay your tax and you want to run the IRS and you're satisfactory to Republicans, or if you're a senator from Louisiana and you don't like Hillary Clinton and you see a call girl, a D.C. madam, frequently, many times, well, they'll let it go. It's a breach of the law. They'll let it go. But if you're governor of New York, one who believes in strong regulation, one who, as Attorney General of New York, did more to regulate Securities and Exchange Commission, more to regulate securities than the Securities and Exchange Commission, more to watch the back of the financial people than I would say any individual in the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, I don't know. Then if you use your own money to buy a prostitute, you're out of there. I guess that just goes to show you. If you make enemies in Washington, if you are effective in New York, then you better have your hands clean. What else is going on? George Bush is saying goodbye yet again. I don't know if you'll be watching him tonight at it's during Bob's show. So go hear Bob's show. Bob is far more interesting than the president. You can watch him on YouTube later on. I don't know what he's going to say that's going to be any different from anything else he said. He's going to go in there and say that, he wasn't perfect, but he did everything he thought he should right, and he really can't think of any major mistakes, and I doubt he'll mention Katrina, and I doubt he'll mention the depression we're in, and he might just brag about Iraq or something like that. It'll be interesting to see what he has to say. And then finally, 5 days from today, we will be rid of this man. But don't think he's going to pack up and go to Crawford. No. No, he's going to Dallas. You see, the president who likes to clear brush, the real man, the guy you could sit back and have a drink with, remember him? Well, actually, he doesn't like clearing brush after all. As Johnny O said in the chat room before the show began, that was just a backdrop. Ask Americans when George Bush bought the Crawford Ranch. I assume that most people in the Horn audience know this, but I'm sure that most Americans do not. They might assume he's had it for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Very few will realize he bought it in 2000, the year in which he ran for election and was selected by the Supreme Court to be President of the United States. And now that he's going to be no longer President, the Crawford White House, is he going to go back there and clear brush all day long? No way! That's manual labor. No. He's going to move to Dallas. They're going to sell the ranch. It was entirely a backdrop. There's also a new EPA Secretary, Lisa Jackson. And Lisa Jackson is unlike any EPA secretary we've seen in the last 8 years. As I said, she actually believes, get this, she actually believes that science should play a role in environmental protection. Amazing. She also respects the requirement in the Clean Air Act to limit carbon dioxide and said that she would consider, even consider regulating coal ash waste from power plants. Wow. Regulating coal. Not something you're likely to hear from a Republican administration. Senator Barbara Boxer asked her to go further to specifically regulate carbon dioxide and to allow other states to do the same. I think she just might do that. I think we might just have a head of an EPA that at least starts to recognize that there's no such thing as clean coal. That maybe in Obama's dreams it could happen sometime in the future. I don't know how. I mean, it's carbon, and I don't know of any way to burn carbon without releasing carbon dioxide. But if we can't develop clean coal, then maybe we should just regulate it. It's amazing. All these big fights that happen for years and years and years. Yeah, maybe I'm just optimistic. Maybe I'm just a true believer, but it just seems like it's not going to be that hard. I mean, look at the Lilly Ledbetter case. Has there been a more classic civil rights case than the Lilly Ledbetter case? You know, of course, Lilly Ledbetter worked for a company for some 30 years. And every time there was a pay increase, they raised the men's salaries more than hers. Now, not surprisingly, they didn't tell her, hey, Lily, congratulations. You got a 1% increase, and all your male colleagues, they each got a 10% increase. Congratulations. What a great job you're doing for the company. No, they kept it secret. Lily Ledbetter had no idea that her male counterparts were earning and getting raises far in excess of hers until she later found out after 30 years, and she brought suit. Because she has a right to equal pay, equal protection under the law. And the Supreme Court, in its wisdom, or lack thereof, said, Lily, well, they increased your pay every 6 months. So, heck, well, you know, we'll give you for the last 6 months, but we can't give you for the last 30 years because you didn't know they were defrauding you. And because you didn't realize that you were being lied to. Because you didn't illegally spy on them to find out that they were cheating you, you're out of luck. Your statute has run. By the way, this is contrary to virtually every legal principle in the common law. They can do it because it's based on a statute. It's based on Title VII, the Civil Rights Act. But the common law, the Old English common law said that if someone damages you and you don't know it, your time to sue comes in from the time you discover it. You know, if a doctor leaves a tiny scalpel, it'd have to be really small, some kind of needle in your body after an operation. And you don't know about it until 5 years later. It starts puncturing your lung, and you come in, you undergo emergency surgery. They save your life, but it's very expensive, and you sue the doctor that left the needle in your body. You shouldn't have to worry about statute of limitations, even if it's, you know, 3 years, and it's been 5 years because you just discovered it. And you had no reason to know you had a needle inside your body. But when it comes to civil rights, when it comes to equal pay for equal work, the Supreme Court said no. Now, Title VII says that if you don't discover that someone's cheating you, even though you had no reason to know they were cheating you, you're out of luck. The cheaters win. The bigots win. Now, the Congress tried to overthrow this ruling. You may well know the Supreme Court is the final word on the Constitution of the United States. But when it comes to interpreting congressional statutes, well, Congress simply has to change the interpretation. It's not that hard to do. They just pass a new law. And they tried, and, you know, Republicans wouldn't let it go through. Now, sailed through. Flying colors, at least in the House. I expect it to come through in the Senate. I expect it to be one of the first bills that Barack Obama passes into law, along with SCHIP, that one, or the Children's Health Insurance Program. Now, that one's interesting, too. This is some 4 million children will now be covered under SCHIP, and it's paid for by a cigarette tax from 60 cents to a dollar. Now, here's something you probably didn't know about SCHIP. At least I didn't know until I researched it today. The American Cancer Society says that 900,000 lives will be saved. Or more specifically, 900,000 tobacco-related deaths will be prevented solely from the tax. So it's not just that it's doing good and helping, you know, children get health care. It's actually preventing Americans from dying from tobacco-related deaths. That's amazing to me. It seems high, but, you know, we have 400,000 people die a year of tobacco. And I guess 900,000 would be over the course of, you know, 20, 30, 40, or the lifetime of the program. I don't know. But they also said that 1.9 million children won't start smoking simply because the price is too high. Stem cell research is also expected to fly through, including embryonic stem cell research. You remember Terri Schiavo? You remember the brain dead woman? Her brain stem was working, but she had no thoughts or feelings, and she was diagnosed by Majority Leader Senator Frist, who saw a video of her eyes moving and said, "Well, she's alive. Her brain's working." I know you're a doctor, Dr. Frist. I just don't think you're that good. But, you know, Dr. Frist is the one that had such a difficult time admitting the fact that there is no HIV in tears. It's very, very hard to be a doctor and to appeal to your unscientific party and the people who support it and who want you to support their prejudices. Stem cell research, I think, will fly through. Again, all these difficult things, it's hard to give such good news, but I think they're going to fly through. Listen, Bush gave us enough bad news, right? We still have all the dead in Iraq, Americans and Iraqis, all the wounded, all the exiles. We still have a massive deficit. We still have the greatest depression since the Great Depression. It's nice to see some good news on some things. Barack Obama was also asked about Don't Ask, Don't Tell, the current law that says that you cannot be openly gay and serve in the military. He was asked, are you going to repeal that? His response was, I don't usually give one-word answers, but this one will do. Yes. Just yes. Now, I don't think it'll be the first thing on his agenda, but I think it's going to happen within the first year or two. And last will become the issue of the District of Columbia, that portion of once Maryland that was carved out under the Constitution to serve as the nation's capital. It's always amazing to me how many Americans don't know. Again, the Horn audience is far more sophisticated than most Americans, but it's always amazing to me how many Americans don't know that residents of the District of Columbia do not have a voice in Congress. They have no representative. They have no senators. Oh, sure, they have a non-voting representative, Eleanor Holmes Norton, and she's, you know, I've had her on this show before. She's a wonderful woman. I like her. I like what she stands for, but she doesn't have a vote. She has cast as many deciding votes on House bills as I have. None. Oh, the Democrats were in control. They gave her a vote on some committees. But when it came down to the vote that matters, the vote on the floor, the vote that decides whether a bill becomes law, she had no vote. No representation in the Senate either. Now, this is amazing to me. It's always been amazing to me. I remember when I first learned this and was shocked by it. These are citizens of the United States of America. They're not, you know, out in Puerto Rico where they have Commonwealth status and they don't pay the United States taxes. No. These aren't citizens of territories. These are citizens of the United States who serve in the military, who serve on juries, who pay taxes. And they don't have representation in Congress. By the way, it wasn't always the case. The Constitution provides that up to 10 square miles can be carved out of the states to form the seat of government. And originally, the District of Columbia was carved out exactly 10 square miles from Maryland and from Virginia. Later on, about 50 years later, Virginia gave back its portion, partly so that the citizens of that part of the district could then vote, could then have representation in Congress. They would go back to Virginia. It was also so they could own slaves, but it was for representation. So that just left this area taken away from Maryland. An area of people that's not huge. There's about 600,000 in the District of Columbia, but there are more people there. They're in Wyoming, which has two senators. So under George Bush, it was understood that the Republicans would never support making the District of Columbia a state. They tried in 1977, came very close when Jimmy Carter was president and the Democrats controlled both houses of Congress, but it didn't become a state. And the Republicans didn't want it to become a state. The District of Columbia is a majority African-American city. There would certainly be a House Democrat and two Senate Democrats. That could change the balance of power. And so the Republicans would rather disenfranchise American citizens, a majority of whom are black, than have more Democrats in Congress. Now, Roland Burris will be the sole African-American in Congress after Obama has left and he's appointed. But, you know, the District of Columbia would probably provide two African-American senators. Maybe one would be white. I mean, there's, you know, it's only 60-something percent of the population is black. But the point is that would it be terrible, so terrible to have one majority black jurisdiction in the United States, given that African-Americans are 12% of the population? Anyway, under George Bush, the idea was that there was no way that D.C. could become a state, but the Republicans felt bad that they're American citizens that don't have the right to vote in our 200-plus-year-old democracy. And so they made a deal called the Utah-D.C. deal. Utah apparently is the next, according to the 2000 census, is the next state to get an extra representative. A bunch of Mormon kids were out of Utah on their missions, and so Utah just missed getting an extra representative. The idea behind the Utah D.C. bill is to increase the size of the House. The size of the Senate is mandated by the Constitution, 2 per state. The size of the House can be any size people want. They're going to increase it from 435 to 437 and do so by giving a seat to D.C. and a seat to Utah. One clear Democrat, one clear Republican wouldn't change the balance of power. And no representation in the Senate. Now, I, for one, am a firm believer that when you're trying to get civil rights, that sometimes a partial loaf is better than none. It's unfair, but it's less unfair than the last 200 years of no representation for D.C. I supported the Utah-D.C. compromise under George Bush. Give Eleanor Holmes Norton a vote, and at least they have a vote in the House. But we can go farther now. Yeah, I supported that a year ago. That was last year. This is now. Now we have a Democratic president. Now we will eventually have 59 Democratic senators, or at least we'll include Lieberman in for that one, and Bernie Sanders of Vermont. 59 liberal, or at least voting with the Democrat senators. For D.C. to become a state, it only requires a majority vote of the House and a majority vote of the Senate. Now they're talking about, well, they'll do the D.C.-Utah vote. No, 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 no. That was then. This is now. We can do more. And I'd like to see people advocate for the state of Columbia. Sure, it's good for the Democratic Party to have two more senators and a member of the House. Heck, we could get past the filibuster by that alone. But we need to do it because it's the only fair thing to do. Every American citizen should have a voice in Congress. That's all the time I have. Next week is Inauguration Week. Hard to believe.